Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For information, call 866-837-9027.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for Tuesday, March 14th, 2006. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. In agricultural news, there was no breakthrough in the Doha round on agricultural tariffs at a weekend London summit of U.S. and other trade officials. Switchgrass research is moving into high gear, and the nation's young farmers and ranchers are optimistic about the future of farming. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll have a full report on yesterday's latest U.S. mad cow case, the nation's third. It's all on the Tuesday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
Tuesday afternoon, prices settled like this in Kansas City. March wheat, 414 down 14 on the day. March wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade, 352 down 8. May, 362 and a half down 5. March corn, 218 and 3 quarters down 1 and 3 quarters. May, 231 and 3 quarters up 3. July, 241 and 3 quarters up 2 and a half. December, 261 up 3. March beans, 574 and 3 quarters up 1 and a quarter. May, 587 and 3 quarters up 3 and a quarter. July, 599 up 3 and a quarter. November, 613 and a quarter up 2 and a quarter. March soybean meal, 172 down 70. March soybean oil, 2331 down 17. At the Merck, March feeders, 102.57 up 55. April live cattle, 83.10 down 52 and a half. And April lean hogs limit down 57.72 and a half on the day. Joining us on the telephone to talk about the markets is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Good afternoon, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Dave. That little thing we talked about last night that none of us could predict happened again today. The index funds struck again.
They sure did, and they were in what, the corn pit today?
Well, from our sources on the floor, they told us that they come into the corn pit there, bought a sizable amount, 4,000 to 5,000 contracts or more in the corn, and just bumped it on up, and then that caused the other pits to take notice. Especially the bean pit was not index fund buying, but it seemed like selling pretty well dried up when the index funds hit the floor.
And that corn buying was, I guess, in the December contract, or was it in the May?
I think it was mainly in the December, but I think there was some also done in the May contract, Dave. So I think you're right on both accounts.
And I guess if you're a technician, you've got to like the idea that the May contract both tested its support level at 227.5, popped up above that, and also broke it back up above the 50-day moving average after testing it.
Yeah, the noon comments by a lot of the floor analysts had, if we close down below here, well, it's going to look bad and the funds will sell on the close. And instead, we broke back above those levels, and technically, this was a little reversal back up after testing the lows. So technically, a nice close in the corn today.
What do you think about the soy trade today?
Soy trade, I think the soy trade's tremendously strong considering all the fundamentals. The way that Brazil is priced 19 to 22 cent discount to U.S. beans at the port, and they've got more beans being registered for early shipment than they did last year. All those things together with the bird flu and everything like that, the beans, for not having the fund activity, really closed well. They also did the little bounce off trick, the 81 in the May beans, and then closing at 87 and three quarters. So once again, the lows seem to hold.
I guess the concern that you have is if wheat is the leader and has been the leader on the upside, you can't like the action that you're seeing technically speaking on the downside. We've gapped lower for the second straight day there.
Yeah, I mean, and that, and also, you know, March went off the board today, you know, in a downtrend here for right now. You know, the wheat is looking hard. I mean, and I look at over the Kansas City area there, Dave, down 14 in the March that went off the board, 11 in the May, and 11 and a quarter lower in the July. And, you know, it's somewhat puzzling. We do have some good rains forecast for Friday, but if we've watched any of the news lately, all we're seeing is big fires going across the prairies in Texas, and that way, so we know how dry it is in that area for burning to happen like that.
So where does wheat go from here after, you know, are these corrections, or are we seeing the start of something more significant? And as I look at some of these wheat charts, I see that you could potentially look at 15 February, 355 in the May, and maybe even try to fill that 345 gap down there.
You know, it's very possible if the rains materialize over this coming weekend, Dave, that we do some of that. You know, as we look at the world numbers, you know, we are short of hard red wheat in the U.S. We are not that short of soft red wheat in the U.S. at all. So basically, if some rains come along, if it can do a little bit of a rescue job on our hard red wheat, we could be testing those areas that you talked about.
Over at the Merck, it started out as a fairly promising day when we spoke this morning. What turned the market?
Well, I guess, you know, some of the ones that have been buyers early decided not to keep or hold on to their positions and maybe reassessed a few things that way. But, you know, all of a sudden we seemed to break down and basically closed right off the lows in the cattle down, you know, 52, 57, 40, and that way across the board. So, you know, just not as good as we were hoping for, but really with the news of mad cow being confirmed, not a bad close even at that.
And the hogs, particularly in the nearby where we went limit down?
Yeah. The hogs just weren't pretty. I mean, it just seemed like they fell apart. They run some technical areas, run into some sell stops, and a lot of unhappiness happened there, which happened to weigh on the cattle.
So what are we left with today for telling producers for the rest of the week?
Well, I think that, you know, we saw the technical turnaround and support in the grain markets. I think that basically we need to watch the weather forecast for the Southwest to see if we might see a little turnaround in the wheat. And, you know, look for a little additional fund or index fund buying in the corn tomorrow.
Thanks much, Wayne.
Thanks, Dave.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He is in New Market, Indiana. At the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, will be joining us for a look at agricultural weather, taking a look at Scott Althoff's two-state forecast this afternoon. He says it's going to be mostly sunny with highs ranging from 38 in northeastern Indiana to 53 in far southern Illinois. Then tonight, clear to partly cloudy. Lows ranging from around 20 in northwestern Illinois to 33 in the far south. Tomorrow, mostly sunny. Highs ranging from around 40 in northwestern Illinois and northeastern Indiana to near 60 degrees in far southern Illinois. In agricultural news, USDA Chief Veterinarian John Clifford on Monday confirmed the third case of BSE found in America since December of 2003.
We received a positive result on a Western blot confirmatory test conducted at our USDA laboratories in Ames, Iowa, on samples from an animal that had tested inconclusive on a rapid screening test performed on Friday, March 10th. The samples were taken from a non-ambulatory animal on a farm in Alabama.
Details about the cow in question, including its exact age, remain sketchy. Clifford said the veterinarian who had the cow tested for BSE estimated its age at 10 years or older based on the wear patterns of its teeth. We'll have more details on that story later this half hour. Leaders of six key World Trade Organization players met in London this past weekend. But according to European Union Trade Commissioner Peter Mandelson, the talks on lowering global trade barriers did not amount to any major breakthroughs. Mandelson joined U.S. Ag Secretary Mike Johanns, U.S. Trade Representative Rob Portman, and leaders from Australia, Brazil, India, and Japan for 2 days of talks. The meeting was an attempt to work through differences regarding the topics of agricultural tariffs and industrial goods ahead of the April 30th deadline for a settlement of those issues. Since U.S. President George Bush called for cellulosic research, more attention is being paid to switchgrass for its potential for ethanol production and other benefits. At the Northern Great Plains Research Lab in North Dakota, soil scientist Mark Liebig has been studying switchgrass. Liebig says switchgrass is desirable because it does a good job of storing carbon in the soil.
Results indicate, at least from our own farm research, that switchgrass, at least relative to cultivated cropland, is pretty effective at storing carbon, especially in deeper in the soil profile.
Liebig says that's important because if carbon is stored deeply in the soil, it's less likely to be lost. And Liebig says that's good for both farmers and those concerned about global warming.
First thing you need to look at is that if you know you're storing carbon, you're improving your organic matter content, which should, in the long run, improve your soil quality. And that's I think, the number one issue. But there's also this broader issue with respect to greenhouse gases and global change. And if we know if we're storing carbon in the soil, we're acting to sort of mitigate those increases in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere.
There's a growing concession that more traditional renewables, like corn and soybeans, won't provide all the answers to the nation's energy problems. Bob Stallman is president of the American Farm Bureau Federation. Stallman says traditional renewables, especially biodiesel, have a long way to go before reaching the level of the still immature ethanol industry.
Biodiesel is, behind the curve a little bit, or it's where ethanol was here, several years ago. It's just beginning, but the potential, for demand for that product is really incredible, particularly if you keep $60 a barrel oil prices up. And, these things allow us, agriculture, to have additional demand for our products and be part of the energy solution in this country. That's not going to be the whole solution, but it is a big part of it.
Another ARS scientist, Ken Vogel in Nebraska, has determined that 2 switchgrass plants per square foot the first year ensures a successful bioenergy crop harvest in subsequent years. According to the latest monthly trade estimate from USDA's Economic Research Service, U.S. ag exports are up $1.2 billion for the first 4 months of fiscal year 2006 when compared to the same period in 2005. Imports increased to $2.4 billion higher so far this year. From December to January, U.S. ag exports increased by $80 million, and imports grew by about $200 million. That means the trade surplus continues to shrink, falling from $3.7 billion in the first 4 months of fiscal year 2005 to $2.5 billion this year. The nation's young farmers and ranchers are still optimistic about agriculture. Jonna Miller is with the American Farm Bureau Federation, and she has this report.
More than 95% of surveyed young farmers and ranchers say they hope their children will follow in their footsteps into agriculture.
I think farmers in general are always optimistic and always looking toward the future, and I think it's such a family-oriented occupation that they certainly want their children to have the same opportunities that they do.
Jerry Barr is chair of the American Farm Bureau's Young Farmer and Rancher Committee. The survey was completed at that group's national leadership meeting last month. They cited land and facilities availability and urbanization as their biggest challenges.
Even if you inherit land, it's not the sizable chunks of land that you need to sustain a full-time operation in today's society. I think it takes a lot more land and a lot more resources and diversification than what our fathers or grandfathers used to farm.
The group was also asked how the government could best help them. Their answer was by promoting renewable fuels.
We have surpluses in a lot of areas that can be used for energy, and at the same time change the public image of agriculture by using our own resources rather than depending on foreign oil.
Jonna Miller, Washington.
Argentine government officials are now saying it could extend to 1 year its six-month ban on beef exports if local beef prices don't continue to decline. Last week, the government announced it would ban 95% of Argentina's beef exports for 180 days to prevent rising foreign demand from pushing local prices beyond the purchasing power of average consumers. That ban begins today. Last year, Argentina shipped almost 600,000 tons of beef for about $1.4 billion. China may be America's largest cotton export customer, but that does not mean the relationship is trouble-free. That's according to Dr. Mark Lang, president and CEO of the National Cotton Council.
China is still a difficulty for the cotton industry. While they're importing a lot more cotton than is called for under their accession agreement, which says they're to have market access of about 4.5 million bales, and they're probably going to import somewhere around 12 to 15 million bales. The way they administer those imports is still a problem for the industry.
Lang says there's no question the vast quantities of cheap textiles China produces is hurting America's textile industry. And he says exporting cotton to China remains complicated.
It's very difficult to be sure that the person that you're talking to in China actually has the right to both import and then has an import license and the ability to contract with you under Chinese law. And they still try to push the cotton that's imported into mills that are required to turn around and export the product back out, which largely means they're shipping the cotton product back to the EU or the US, which is a further strain then on our textile industry.
Chinese textile exports to America are expected to climb sharply this year. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Bastifer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
USDA confirmed a cow in the state of Alabama has tested positive for mad cow disease, the third case in the U.S., and second discovered through USDA's enhanced screening program. A routine rapid screening test last week was inconclusive for BSE. Results were confirmed by a Western blot test. But much work remains to be done. USDA says the exact age of the animal is unknown. It's estimated the animal was older than 10 based on the wear of its teeth. The age is important because the U.S. put feed regulations in place 9 years ago to prevent mad cow disease from spreading. And little else is known about the animal's history. John Clifford is chief veterinarian for the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service. Clifford says the cow's herd of origin and even its country of origin is still to be discovered.
At this time, we would not be able to indicate whether it's of U.S. origin or of Canadian origin. As I'd indicated, the animal was really at this particular location for less than a year, and it will require us to complete our investigation before we can determine the actual farm of origin or birth of origin.
That location was an Alabama farm. State authorities there say it's under an informal quarantine, but would not release its location until state and federal investigations are complete. Unable to walk, the cow, a red-colored beef cow known as a Santa Gertrudis, was killed by an attending veterinarian and buried on the farm in question. Samples of the cow's tissues were sent to USDA for further investigation. U.S. officials, including Secretary Mike Johans, sought to reassure Japan, South Korea, and other trading partners that U.S. beef remains safe. Negotiations with Japan for reopening its border to U.S. beef are already strained. But Clifford says if the age of the cow is proven definitively to be 10 or older, this latest case of mad cow disease should have little or no impact on U.S. efforts to reopen Japan's market to American beef.
We would not anticipate that this would impact our ongoing negotiations. As I'd indicated, our product is safe. We've got a number of interlocking safeguards, and Japan themselves has had 20-plus cases of BSE. And we believe that their product is safe with regards to the safeguards that they have in place in that country. We have a ruminant feed ban to protect animal health in this country as well.
Still, Clifford admitted that much is not known, and Japan will be closely watching a U.S. federal investigation.
This particular cow was on this farm for less than a year. So therefore, we will have to do an epi investigation, which will require us to try to trace her back to her farm of origin. Once we determine the farm of origin, and then through that, we would determine where other locations she may have been as well. We would determine through that then, if we're able to determine that, we will determine animals of interest. We would go back to the farm of origin and talk to that particular owner about what records they have or may have relative to time of birth and her first year of life on that farm.
The South Korean government issued a statement earlier today saying if the infected cow was born before April of 1998, it will not influence a resumption of beef trade agreement hammered out in January. Under the January deal, South Korea planned to resume limited imports of U.S. beef by the end of this month. USDA says it is also conducting an immunohistochemistry test on the BSE-infected cow. That test is pending. Clifford stressed that the Alabama cow did not enter the human nor animal feed chains, and Clifford added this third case of BSE in the U.S. will have no effect on USDA's plans to reduce the number of cattle tested for mad cow disease.
To date, including the animal in today's announcement, only two of these highest-risk animals have tested positive for the disease as part of our enhanced surveillance program. As we approach the conclusion of our enhanced surveillance program, let me offer a few thoughts regarding surveillance going forward. I can assure you that we will continue to base our maintenance surveillance testing on international guidelines. Though the nature and extent of maintenance surveillance has not yet been finalized, the incidence of BSE in this country remains extremely low.
Monday afternoon, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association and National Farmers Union issued press releases stressing the safety of U.S. beef. Still, the discovery of a third case of BSE in the U.S. is raising serious concerns, especially in the current environment where the U.S. safety system is under scrutiny. Japan is still awaiting answers to 20 questions of how banned bone ended up in a veal import just days after lifting a two-year ban on U.S. beef. USDA says those answers are coming this week. Meanwhile, Hong Kong has suspended shipments from Swift Beef Company after a bone shard was discovered in a U.S. shipment. Hong Kong partially lifted its two-year ban on imports of U.S. beef only last December. And Taiwan today says it also wants more details on the latest American BSE case. This is Dave Dickey, AM 580 Agriculture.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. The judge in George Ryan's racketeering and fraud trial refused a request from deliberating jurors for a law dictionary this morning. Judge Rebecca Pallmeyer asked jurors to keep deliberating. The jury of six men and six women started the deliberations yesterday. They're considering more than 5 months of testimony on charges against former Governor Ryan and co-defendant Larry Warner of racketeering, mail fraud, and other offenses. Three teenagers testified today in Maurice Legrone Jr.'s murder trial that two of the children he's accused of killing told them they were going to go on a boat ride the night that they drowned in Clinton Lake. The teenagers testified about 6-year-old Christopher Hamm and 3-year-old Austin Brown. The two oldest of the three children who died, 23-month-old Kylie Hamm, also died when the car they were in slid into Clinton Lake in 2003. Outside court, defense attorney Jeff Justice said the teens' testimony was merely schoolyard gossip. A survey from the Temporary Employment Service Manpower says 23% of Champaign-Urbana area employers expect to hire more workers between April and June of this year. That's a bit of a decline from a year ago. 7% of employers expect cutbacks, while the rest were unsure or expect no change. As Indiana legislators try to wrap up business before their midnight deadline, there's still some question over Governor Mitch Daniels' highway plan. Some Republicans say they still have reservations about the bill, even though legislative leaders say they've reached a compromise acceptable to the governor. The National Weather Service says the city of Springfield was slammed by 2 tornadoes, not just one. The first was about a half mile wide at its biggest and stayed on the ground about 6 minutes. The second followed almost immediately, reaching 300 yards wide and staying on the ground about 5 minutes. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at lincolnlandagrienergy.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at agricultural weather, it's Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon, Don.
Good afternoon.
Well, there's been a lot of debate in the last day or two up at the Chicago Board of Trade about rain potential in the hard red winter wheat regions of the country and Kansas City. What light can you shed on this?
Well, we do have a little piece of new information. In the last hour or so, we have received the new computer model out of Europe. A lot of meteorologists look at this very carefully, as it has a tendency to sometimes be a pretty good-looking computer model. And based on the new trends that we see with the new forecast, it does appear that some of those hard winter wheat areas do have a fighting chance of finally getting some decent precipitation heading into this weekend and into early next week.
Will it be great as, what, north central Texas through central Oklahoma? That's
I would
areas.
Have to say that those areas are going to be favored the most. The storm system, the way we think it will take shape, is going to be slower moving than some of the other computer models are suggesting and take a track a little bit further south. So most of Kansas, central and eastern Oklahoma, and north central Texas, those areas you outlined, right now, the way things stand, do have the best chance.
Meanwhile, here in the Midwest, it's turned cooler. And how long will it stay that way?
Well, right now, the forecast trend over the next week to 10 days is for temperatures to be averaging below normal. Severe cold, no. But the cool trend that has moved on in is going to stick around, as we will see low pressure over most of the nation east of the Rockies next week. And while this won't tap into any really bitterly cold air, it will certainly keep temperatures a bit cooler than normal.
Of course, southwest parts of the Corn Belt need some moisture. Are they in line to get any this week?
They are, but it will likely come with this large storm this weekend and early next week. This next storm coming in this weekend and next week that will affect those southern hard winter wheat areas is going to cover a lot of territory. It will also spread rains into the western and southwest Corn Belt and all the way through the Dakotas.
Let's turn our attention globally, where it looks to me, based on what I can tell, rain fell pretty good in Brazil yesterday.
That's right, and there's more on the way. Many areas of Brazil and Argentina looking at good chances of precipitation for the rest of this week and in the next.
And what is its potential for slowing down the harvest?
I would say pretty good in Brazil. Argentina, while getting some rain, not as heavy as up in Brazil. So there may be some harvest delays in Brazil, especially central and southern and southeast growing areas.
Go ahead and let you rest your voice.
Okay, thanks.
Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. And that is today's Closing Market Report. Don't forget, you can join us for another AM 580 Agricultural Outlook panel tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. at the DeKalb County Farm Bureau Auditorium in Sycamore. We'll have Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities, and Bill Biederman of Allendale on the stage to to take your marketing questions. Of course, there is no charge for you to go to that meeting, and advance reservations are not required. We hope you do go by and see us tomorrow evening at the DeKalb County Farm Bureau Auditorium in Sycamore. Again, the meeting starts at 7 o'clock. Have a great day, everyone.